This is VFR Katura and you're listening to WGXA Accra 98.7 FM.
Wavefarm's Public Art Park begins opening Saturdays on June 3rd for drop-in visits anytime between noon and 6 p.m. The art park is on Wavefarm's 29-acre campus in Accra, featuring 13 installations. The study center, including a research library, the WGXC 90.7 FM Accra broadcast studio, and accommodations for Wavefarm's International Artist Residency Program. Visitors to Wavefarm's Art Park receive a guided tour of the campus. Admission is free, and tours typically last between 60 and 90 minutes. The art park is available to see on other days through October through reservations at wavefarm.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years. Offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Mama Getty of Hyannis, Massachusetts. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
Next, here is local music from Erin Dyer from the Hudson-based band Buke and Gace. Here, she collaborates with Stargaze. The song is called It's Over from 2023.
I can see it in your eye that it's over. It's over. It's over. I can see.
I'm Tom Rowe here in Acre at the Wave Farm, and we are now joined by Stefan Spera, who is based in Saugerties and has a new record out as of Monday, I think, October 23rd, with Bill Siemens and Tim Diagram, called The World Was Turning Before, on a French label called Lops. Did Stefan, did I get any of that wrong?
Well, it's Bill Seaman, but that's about it.
Did I say, what did I say? Did I say Bill Siemens?
Yeah.
And there's no S, huh? I've got an S on my copy.
Yeah, who knows? But anyway, yeah, so it's Bill and Tim Diagram. So that's our latest. Came out Monday.
And Bill, you've been playing with a while, right? Or have you been playing with both of them a while?
Yeah, no. You know, we're a small group of composers who all know each other, and Bill and I knew each other for a very long time, or a good amount of time. And then one day he said, "You want to collaborate?" And I said, "Yeah," immediately, because his stuff is pretty unbelievable. He's at Duke University. He's the big media guy, and he makes lovely recordings. And so as soon as we got started to make them, Tim got in touch with us and said he wanted to release it on his hand stitched label in Britain, which has really a lot of great music. And that was very successful, that record. And then Tim just joined us, and we just continued what we were doing, but with Tim on board as well. So it was pretty nice. It grew.
And how do you describe your compositions, and are your compositions different than the compositions that you do with them?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know myself. I mean, you know, everyone uses the term ambient, but that can mean anything these days. I think ambient, modern, classical sometimes even, because Bill has an enormous library that he creates with other musicians of, you know, French horn, violins, cello. So we can cover a lot of territory, and we're not droney ambient, even though some of the pieces appear to be that way. We're more, you know, our stuff moves a little bit more.
And I'm guessing you probably don't make music to fit some niche. You're just kind of making sounds. Why do you make the sounds that you make? Is it for the listener, or is it for you, or?
Well, that's a question I think everybody that makes sound asks. Why do you make it? I mean, you know, the whole artistic thing, because I have to. But the why you make the sounds that you do, I mean, it depends on a lot of factors. Why it's interesting to play with a guy like Bill is because he builds libraries, and then he knows how to work all the equipment, and he can bring it all together for his own very, very distinct sound. Tim works another total way, but we all have a similar sensibility. So I don't worry about what it's called, you know. People call us all different things. I don't, you know, we didn't set out to make, hey, let's make an ambient album, or let's make a classical album or an experimental album. None of us think that way.
And do you perform this live, or is this strictly a composition?
This stuff, there's no live performance. I mean, Bill's in North Carolina, Tim is in Britain. So, I don't see us doing it. And I'm sure it would be great live. I'm sure, you know, I mean, it'd be a great experience for us and all that, but we just, we're really scattered. And Bill is, you know, he's really busy. He's a professor. He's got, he runs the whole media department at Duke University. So our time is kind of, we're spread around.
Yeah. So how did you record the record? Did you do it? You did it from afar?
Oh yeah. Basically, we just when Bill first said, "You want to make some music?" I said, "Sure." And you know, he just sent me some things, and then it's basically I take say he sends me five things. Now they're not. They're loops. They're usually like a piece of music of a certain length. And if he turns it into not a song, but, you know, more of a thing than just a loop, he will send me the stems, which are every layer of it, so that I can take it. And whatever I hear, something I respond to, I respond to. It's almost like Exquisite Corpse, because I respond to something there, I'll send that back. But since we are sending all the layers, everyone who receives it can look at all the material and say, okay, you know, this layer gets this treatment and not. And how we started this record was we all agreed we were going to work together, and we had no end game in sight. But Tim sent over a bunch of things, and Bill and I started to pick them apart and then send back. And then all of a sudden, it's a flurry. And you forget what you're doing. You forget what the piece is called, everything, because ideas are flying back and forth. And so it's basically an additive game. And then we subtract later, too, of course.
And when you're first starting, I talk to a lot of artists who say they need to set up some sort of framework or some sort of – do you set up some sort of framework, or you just see what – you just have – I have this idea, and let's see what happens out of it, or –
No, we don't, because we've all been at it a long time and know what we're doing. So we, you know what I mean? It's a different thing where we don't say, hey, let's try to do this. We just send stuff, and how the others respond to it, we almost know, because we know each other. Tim and Bill are both guys that I've been a big fan of their music for a long time. And, you know, you can, as a player, you know kind of what somebody's doing and where their headspace is. So we don't say anything about it, because Tim could send over six ideas and we don't use any of them. There's no ego involved. So it isn't like, I didn't like this. It's more like, here's what I made. And that's a very interesting thing, because as you're sending material back and forth, the entire of ego is dissolved, because, you know, sometimes I'll get a piece from Tim or Bill and I'll think, did I write that beginning part? Why, you know, and sometimes something will sound so familiar and you don't worry about whether it's yours. You just, you know, you get this funny notion like, that's very interesting. Did he do that or did I do that? So everything begins to blend.
Does it work like that way throughout the music, or is it the roles kind of fluid, or do one of you sort of is kind of the leader in percussion, and one of you sort of a melody person, and one of you sort of a dissonant? Is it sort of like that, or is it constantly shifting?
Well, we try to keep it shifting, but you know, when you hear the record, if you hear the heavy reverby piano, you know that's pretty much Bill, because Bill records on a grand piano that's sitting around the university. And if you hear field recordings, they're mostly me, because I have been making field recordings for, you know, 20 something years. And then if you hear a certain kind of drone movement, you know that's Tim. So there do seem to be some specific roles, but we still try to avoid it.
And if you meet somebody, how do you describe this music when you're like, you're in the, give your elevator pitch of what this record is like?
Well, I actually haven't, I don't tell anybody what it is. I say I have a collaboration with Bill Seaman and Tim Diagram, pardon me. And that's the end of it. I say it's, a lot of people that I meet, I'll say it's ambient, maybe, to give them some sort, if they have no idea whatsoever. But I love to shy away from describing it. And
you want to leave it up to the listener to sort of have their impressions and not superimpose some pre existing opinions on it?
Well, sure, because right now there are a couple labels around who are some of the really good, let's call them ambient labels. They're not ambient. They're kind of modern classical, and then they're kind of this or that. So there's this huge melting pot. And I just, you know, I come from a background where, like, there were a lot of jazz guys, and nobody said it's this or that. They said, no, we're just playing.
Yeah, and now you're in a world where, like, classical is the main word, and what does that word mean? You know, that's the weirdest word I know to describe music.
Even modern classical, I sort of don't want to say it. I play in a duo with Tim Milder, and we're called Spirit Radio, and we describe that stuff as chamber ambient. Which, you know, if you have to have a term, I thought that's a pretty good
one. Better than modern classical or just classical, which is just, what is classical, you know?
Yeah.
It's
got that ECM sound, you know, I think.
Or it was made 1,000 years ago, or, like, you know, what?
That would be cool.
You know, which is it? But we, you know, we'll let people, we'll get to a track in a second. Where can people find the record? Again, it's called The World Was Turning Before, out on Monday. Where can people find it?
I believe they can get it almost anywhere, but I mean, going to Bandcamp would do it, because Bandcamp has been very good for artists like us. And Laps, LAAPS, is a French label, and the man who has that, this is his third iteration of labels. He did a label, and he said there's only going to be 100 releases, and that's the end of the label. Then he immediately started another one, and Laps is his new label. And like once a month or so, he has a, you know, boom, this is out. This is out on vinyl, CD, and digital. So people could go to Bandcamp and go Bandcamp/Laps, or they could look up one of our names. They could look up the name of the album, which this one is, happens to be called The World Was Turning Before. And, you know, I think buying it through Bandcamp's the best bet, especially with people, you know, there's a lot of people who love to have a physical object.
Yeah, you have an actual vinyl album out, not just a digital.
Yes, and it's really beautifully done, and it's a very sick blue color, the vinyl. It's a kind of almost deep baby blue cover vinyl, which is really unusual looking, and a lot of people want that, but so they should go to the Bandcamp one, because you order through him, it's your best bet of not getting totally killed on shipping. Which is a big problem for artists right now.
It's a big problem for musicians right now. The United States needs to change some rules about shipping music.
So does Europe.
Yeah.
There are a few labels who have said, you know, we can't.
They're just giving up. Yeah.
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 So, lawmakers, you need to do something out there about postage rates for music, because you changed.
Let's not hold our breath.
Yeah. All right, let's hear something from The World Was Turning Before. We're talking with Stefan Spera now. Which track should we go out with? And if you, do you need to set up that track?
Oh, good question. no, I don't need to. Let me see. Do I want to set up anything? How about the title track, The World Was Turning Before?
All right, we started with the first track, and we'll finish with the last track. How's that?
All right. The album covers a lot of different materials, and some of the pieces sound different. And I actually can't think off the top of my head what The World Was Turning Before sounds like. So let's hear it, see if it closes it up right.
All right. We've got a little buzz in the other channel, so I'm going to unplug you and then plug in the different computer to play this track. But thank you for joining us today on the WGX The Afternoon Show.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I want to thank you all for the trust that you have instilled in me to lead us in this historic and unprecedented moment that we're in. The challenge before us is great, but the time for action is now, and I will not let you down.
Louisiana Republican Mike Johnson will be the new Speaker of the House after winning a 220-209 vote. Johnson's record puts him near the right edge of the Republican caucus, voting against certifying the 2020 election and leading support for a lawsuit challenging it. But Johnson's calling for collaboration and says he'll form a bipartisan commission on the nation's debt. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries voiced Democrats' reservations, citing a federal Don't Say Gay bill Johnson sponsored and his calls for a strict nationwide abortion ban. But Jeffries is also reaffirming a commitment to bipartisanship for the sake of American democracy.
This is a turbulent time in the American journey, and we have but one charge to keep during this moment of great fragility. Our union must be sustained. Our union must be strengthened. Our union must succeed.
The United Auto Workers Union and Ford have reached a tentative agreement which could end a big part of a massive strike. The details are still emerging, but recent talks have centered around 25% wage increases and improved benefits. If approved, this could become a model for deals with General Motors and Stellantis. Meanwhile, former President Donald Trump was fined another $10,000 for violating a gag order after testifying in his New York civil trial on Wednesday. Trump insisted his typical comments were about witness and former Trump employee Michael Cohen, but many feel the real target was court staff, who he's attacked on social media before. A new survey from the Public Religion Research Institute finds a majority of Americans feel the future of democracy is at stake in the next election. The poll finds a quarter of Americans and a third of Republicans say true patriots may have to resort to violence. Liliana Mason, a professor of political science at Johns Hopkins, says leaders need to come together to condemn this kind of violence.
One very easy thing for us to do, not easy, but concrete thing for us to do is to try to encourage our leaders to make it very, very clear to their supporters and to people who trust them and follow them that these types of attitudes do not have a place in a healthy democracy.
After discussions with former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says China, Russia, and Iran constitute a new axis of evil, echoing an Iraq War-era phrase.
Now we have terrorism and we have big power competition. So this is the broadest threat to the democratic world than we've had since before the Berlin Wall came down.
A New York Times investigation says Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas failed to disclose when a $250,000 luxury RV loan was forgiven and failed to pay taxes on it. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Four rules governing partisan poll challengers in Michigan's election official handbook will have to be removed or enacted through the legislature, according to a Michigan appeals court. Poll challengers are official political party representatives who observe the counting process in the secure area, unlike public poll observers who must watch from a designated viewing area. According to reporting by Michigan Live, the new rules in question were written into Michigan's official election rules manual for the May 2022 update. These included requiring state registration of poll challengers in advance when party credentials were previously used and challengers could be appointed on election day, limiting challengers to speaking only with the designated liaison, bans on cell phones in the absentee ballot counting area, and removal of challengers for repeated impermissible challenges, reasons other than the voter's eligibility or ballot deficiencies. After a poll challenger was removed for allegedly harassing Detroit election officials under the new rules, the Republican Party sued. The court found the state's rules had exceeded the Secretary of State's authority. Michigan's Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson appealed, but the higher court upheld most of the lower court's ruling. State officials must now reissue a corrected handbook, removing the new rules not specified in Michigan election law. We have an explanation of the role of poll observers at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days, well, on Thursday, it will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 72 degrees. On Thursday night, it will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 53 degrees. And on Friday, it will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 75 degrees. And on Friday night, it will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 57 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, in Greene and Columbia counties.
Next, here is Columbia County's Elvis Perkins with the song Sea Monkey from his 2020 album Creation Myths.
Thinking aloud, God in the The New York State Legislature held a hearing on October 24th to discuss a proposed law to reduce the amount of packaging in New York, particularly from plastic. A growing number of countries and states have adopted laws to shift the end-of-life responsibility for material management from municipalities to producers by establishing extended producer responsibility programs. Almost one-third of the waste generated in the U.S. is from plastic and packaging. We hear from Bobby Chase Wilden of Clean and Healthy New York, Judith Ank of Beyond Plastics, and Vanessa Agudelo of the Westchester Alliance for Sustainable Solutions.
My name is Bobby Wilding. I am the executive director for Clean and Healthy. Clean and Healthy's mission is to build a just and healthy world where toxic chemicals are simply unthinkable. And this policy, the Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act, would be an important step in that direction. I just want to flag that we're talking about this as if it's just a waste problem, but this is really a design opportunity. You know, when we enforce and require manufacturers and packagers, the people who are actually making the choices about how much stuff we get and how much stuff is required to move things across the supply chain, they're the ones that have the power to design non-toxic, reusable, reduced material solutions that protect the planet and protect our health. I believe that the bill that is under discussion today is an important step in that direction. And I just want to flag that whether you look at the waste hierarchy that Dave Vitale mentioned earlier, or you look at the more recent framing of circular economy, the solutions that are the most sustainable and most effective are the ones that drive reduction and reuse, including remanufacturing, repair, and things like that. Recycling is lower than that. Energy production is a weird thing that's not actually, we know, beneficial to the environment because it's just creating climate gases, is below that, and somehow disposal is at the bottom. Without requiring this transition, we allow the petrochemical industry to continue having a pipeline for their toxic products to move from oil and gas rigs to climate change. Discussion of what chemical recycling might be, there's no proven technology for something called chemical recycling that's actually good for the planet. Packaging is increasingly coming from petrochemicals, and the chemicals that are contained in these base and these plastics are harmful. But even just looking at the substances that are associated with plastics, the UN found that there are 13,000 chemicals associated with the production of plastics. 7,000 of those have potential harmful effects. 3,200 of those have one or more properties of concern. Clearly, plastic is not a solution. Clearly, non-toxic reuse is the direction that we need to move, and the policy before us today will get us there. I just want to flag that there are solutions that are out there, and there are entities that are working hard to ensure that the solutions we move to are, in fact, safer. Clean Production Action and the Center for Environmental Health, for example, are creating green screen certifications for materials, and they just released a certification specification for food packaging, serviceware, and cookware for reusable products, as well as having existing policies around single-use materials that are safer. We urge that solution that the legislature advances as strong source reduction requirements, bans the worst plastics and the worst toxic chemicals, sets non-toxic reuse mandates, and bans false solutions by having a strong definition of recycling.
Judah Thank, I'm the president of Beyond Plastics. I served as regional administrator at the EPA during the Obama administration, and before that was deputy secretary for the environment in the New York governor's office. If you are a fiscal conservative, you should love this bill, because right now taxpayers are carrying a very heavy load to deal with a massive amount of excess packaging. The environmental impacts are outlined in my testimony. Government has the ability to deal with problems like this if the legislative body adopts a strong law. Look at fuel efficiency standards for cars. Who wants to spend more money at the pump? It was the Clean Air Act that established fuel efficiency standards for cars. Fuel efficiency standards have greatly increased over the years, despite strong opposition from car companies. If you go and buy an appliance, you will notice your new refrigerator or dishwasher, you will save money on your monthly utility bill because the new appliances are more efficient with energy. What this bill does is create environmental standards for packaging with a real emphasis on reduction, not just recycling. This bill before you is commensurate with the problem that we're trying to solve. Other states have done this. Some of the states have made some mistakes. For instance, the California packaging law specifically exempts, quote, single-use materials that present unique challenges in compliance. That is a huge loophole. This is not a new approach. The late Assemblymember Richard Brodsky and Senator Nick Scano introduced the Environmentally Sound Packaging Act in the late 1980s. It's quite similar to the bill before you today. NYPERG published Plagued by Packaging in 1990. I helped write this report. It was 33 years ago. We have to solve this problem. The problem has gotten worse. Plastic production is expected to increase 40% by 2030. We're turning our oceans into a landfill. This is an environmental justice issue with where plastic is being produced. Over 10,000 chemical additives in plastics. Microplastics are being found in our drinking water, our air, our lungs, our blood, breast milk, and the human placenta. Microplastics can only be tackled if you reduce the generation and use of plastics. And unfortunately, plastics recycling has been an abysmal failure.
My name is Vanessa Godello. I'm the organizer with Westchester Alliance for Sustainable Solutions, and I am here in Albany today for the hearing on the Packaging Rejection and Recycling Infrastructure Act. I'm coming from the great little city of Peekskill, which is about 2 hours south of here on the Hudson River. It's the city that I grew up in. It's also the city that I served as a council member as for 4 years formerly. So it's a city that I hold dear. And it's also the city that is home to the trash incinerator, Wheelbraider, where Westchester County, as well as other surrounding counties, areas in New York City and Connecticut, ship over their trash to have it disposed of, or as we know it, gets burned and then ends up in the air that we breathe. And people don't realize that burning trash is much worse than burning coal in terms of greenhouse gas emissions, dioxins, health impacts, and the numbers don't lie. The city of Peekskill, aside from it being a low-income community, one of the poorest in Westchester County, a black and brown community, it also having this facility has greatly exacerbated health, already poor health conditions. We have some of the highest rates of asthma. In fact, the emergency visits due to asthma are about double of that, the average of Westchester County. Really high rates of people suffering from cardiovascular disease, lung disease, high reproductive issues, low birth, babies born with low birth weight.
So why are you here at the Packaging Reduction Act?
So we know that we can't close down the trash incinerator tomorrow, but we know that we can greatly impact the materials that are going into this facility. And this bill can make a tangible difference in the pollution that is being put into our air. Plastic, we're working on getting food scraps out of this facility, but plastics is something that we know end up in this trash incinerator. We know that plastic recycling is a lie. So this bill, we need our leaders to realize that this bill is so important and really setting industry standards to ensure that we can reduce the amount of plastic that is in our packaging, ensure that there's no chemicals or toxics in our in that packaging as well, and ensure that we don't accept chemical recycling as an alternative, as a solution, as a way in which plastic ends up in our packaging again. Our world is greatly impacted by its dependency on plastic. It's a big crisis that we have, that we're seeing in our environment. In Peekskill, it's an environmental injustice. This facility is a long-standing environmental injustice, and if New York State is really serious about starting to find solutions and get on the road towards repairing these harms, then we need to start by passing bills like this that will start to regulate the industry and start to put forth standards that greatly sends a message that we're done with plastic and we're moving towards materials that are much more sustainable for our environment.
This has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Next, we have 2023 music from the album The Intrinsic Nature of Ship, from jazz pianist Matthew Shipp. This is Jazz Frequency from Matthew Shipp. Thank you. Here is Hudson resident Emily Ritz, a song released in 2020 called I'm in Love.
These hands are to love, these hands are to hold. These hands I'm keeping all for my own. I'm in